All right, welcome to The Complete Knockout, the MMA podcast show where we talk all things MMA related, whether that's in the UFC or in Bellator. And today we are joined by none other than Cash Tyreef, a fellow YouTuber, a fellow MMA junkie here in the MMA community. Tyreef, how are you doing, man?
Yo, what's going on? I'm all good.
Perfect.
Just getting ready for a week after these fights. One card was good and one card not so much, so I'm ready to break it all down. All
right, which card did you not like? Which one was the not so good one?
I'm going to be honest. It was the 207 card, and I know it was pretty harsh on my channel about the Ryan Bader fight. It wasn't even just that. It was sort of like, you know, we had the Lorenz Larkin fight. Lorenz Larkin is a guy who came over, body explosion, he was in the UFC on a tear when he left, so high expectations. And I just feel like he sort of laid an egg, got a unanimous decision. Even, you know, Kevin Ferguson Jr., he's another one I was hype on. He laid an egg. Now, that looked good for Corey Browning, but it just sort of sucked the air out of the room.
I agree.
And it was capped off by an amazing Ryan Bader performance.
Yeah, so I actually watched your video, man, and I saw you did turn into Ryan Bader. So let's talk about Bellator 207 first. And I think there's actually some good things on this card. Like one of which, Mandel Nalo, you know, I'm from Toronto, so we guys, as fellow Canadians, we got to stick together. Mandel Nalo with that knockout of the year candidate on Carrington Banks, that knee, man, that was absolutely vicious. That got me pumped and ready to watch the rest of the card. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was ridiculous.
And he looked effortless when he threw it too.
Yeah.
Like, he looked like he just sort of saw it in transition and went for it and it landed.
Yeah. Well, you know, to be honest, when I looked at the replay, Carrington Banks, he kind of dove in there with his left jab, and when he entered into that, you know, into the distance of Mandel, he put his head down, and Mandel being, you know, the taller fighter, I think he read that and he was able to just like flush that knee, because, you know, it wasn't explosive, it was just a perfectly timed knee and right on the chin of Carrington Banks. And it was super well, like, it was fun to watch. I think it showed a lot of discipline on Mandel and a lot of patience and timing too.
Yeah, it just sort of looked like he threw it out there, just perfect timing. Picture perfect, like he couldn't have landed any better.
Yeah, and what did you think of Mike Kimball scoring that 6-second knockout? Do you think it was a fair and just 6 seconds, or do you think it was premature stoppage? What did you think?
I had to go back in and catch that one because I tuned in around the Corey Browning fight, so I went back and there wasn't much to go back and catch, but it looked pretty fair to me. I didn't have too many problems with it.
Yeah,
and like that early on the card, my only problem with the early stoppages on these Bellator shows is pacing. If it's worse than FS1,
yeah,
that's the only thing I have about it. But it seemed pretty fair. I'm sure we'll get to it on the Bellator 208, but that card had an even weirder stoppage with Chet Congo.
Yeah, that did. But yeah, so let's just before 208, I want to talk actually about Mike the Kimball Savage. I know you just said you tuned in a little bit later, but after a performance like that, I was inclined to do some research into this guy. And so he's only 22 years old, so super young guy, right? Fights out of Thunder Martial Arts Academy. He's a flyweight, and just take this in, as a flyweight, his record is 2-0. Both of its wins coming by KO or TKO within the first minute. His first match lasted only 1 minute and 3 seconds, and now obviously the second match with Alex Potts only lasted 6 seconds. So this kid, I think he's showing he has some serious dynamite in his hands for the flyweight division.
And it sucks to hear, because it's like in the same week that we're hearing about the UFC, you know, possibly cutting their flyweight division.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, here we got a guy that's pairing it up, and, you know, over in Risen, I think last week, Kyoji Haraguchi had a good showing in a kickboxing match. And so, you know, he's a former UFC flyweight. So flyweights, they're kind of tearing it up right now. Sergio Pettis had a good one last week, so
yeah,
it's a good time to be a flyweight.
I guess for Formiga, Sergio Pettis is actually fighting again. He already accepted a bout. I don't remember which card, but you know, he did lose via unanimous decision on 229. Both the Pettis brothers actually lost on 229. But overall, Bellator 207, the undercard, so everything actually below the Corey Browning fight, in my opinion, was kind of like almost undercardy vibes, and a lot of good people, not a lot of known people, I should say, but you know, some entertainment for sure, some highlight reels, some young and up and comers. Now let's talk about Baby Slice, Kevin Ferguson Jr. versus Corey Browning. What did you think? Let's talk about the first round first before we really dissect the whole fight. What did you think of the first round?
I mean, I feel like I've seen that story before, the first round. Like, it just felt like he was just full of this energy. That's what it just felt like. He just had an adrenaline dump. He just blew everything in that first round. But I saw a lot of people online saying it just looked like his shoulder was rushing in. I didn't get that vibe. It actually looked like he did have some technique there, especially on the ground. A lot of those like bigger guys, the wrestler types, when they get on the ground, I'm always interested to see how they deal with scrambles.
Yeah,
like especially with guys that they're just not gonna let they're not just gonna lay there and let you pound on them. So it was interesting, but I could tell once he got back up, it took him a couple seconds to even get back up after the first round. That was all I needed to see. And, you know, goes out there and he got TKO'd.
Yeah.
And now on the flip side of that, Corey Browning, could you write a better performance in a way?
No.
Showed some heart and got the TKO over a name.
Yeah. Honestly, great point. Corey Browning, I had no idea who this kid was. I think it was just, I thought of him as just another piece of meat for Kevin Ferguson Jr. to go up in the rankings, you know, improve his record, make a name for himself. But this Corey Browning kid, if you look back, he was coming off a loss. His record was 2 wins, 1 loss at the time he accepted the fight against Kevin Ferguson Jr. Imagine being that kid, knowing that your next fight is going to be against the son of Kimbo Slice, this guy who has a lot of hype around him. He's not just some random nobody to, you know, train upon. This guy's a serious fighter. He showed good skills in his last fight against Devin Brock, Fred Freeman, and whoever it might be. But like I said, man, Corey showed patience. He showed heart. And the thing I really liked about him is his capitalization. He realized that Kevin Ferguson Jr. was tired before anybody else in the ring. He probably witnessed that with the decrease in power by each shot landed by Kevin Ferguson. And so he played the patient game, dragged the fight to this, you know, with 2 second round to the ground, and he capitalized on Kevin Ferguson just basically letting go of his back and taking that TKO victory. He almost made it look easy against a top fighter like that.
Yeah, and I know Kevin Ferguson, I'm not too harsh on that damaging his upside because he is still developing. I mean, it almost felt like yesterday when they announced that he was even picking up MMA, and here he is, you know, fighting what seems like on a regular basis. So I don't think that'll hurt him in the long run, but that definitely was a poor performance nonetheless. But I think he learns from that. It wasn't the type of performance where he just completely shit the bed. He got to show some technique with some added energy into it, which I think just tired him out come second round.
Yeah, and that's true. And if you look at Kevin Ferguson Jr., his last couple of fights, he has been fighting really frequently. You know, in 2018, he's fought 2 fights, the one on Saturday. And then before that, he fought in April on the Chandler versus Grits card. And, this guy fights quite frequently. The only thing I would have to tell him is the record, although maybe at this stage in your career isn't that important, when you try to build your name for yourself, especially when your father is who he was, Kimbo Slice, may he rest in peace, you have to be careful and not get your record to look too ugly. You know, you have to start racking up some victories on a consistent basis and most importantly show improvement. So if he comes back into his next Bellator fight with the same gas tank, I mean, I think I'm gonna have to give him a bit of a harsher evaluation and judge him a little bit more based on that.
Yeah, now do you think Bellator is the right organization for him? Do you think he should have signed with maybe a King of the Cage or, you know, one of these smaller promotions? Do you think he should have done that, or do you think Bellator is the right fit with guys like Dennis and Ed Ruth?
I think Bellator is the right fit, actually. I think Bellator has a lot of fighters that obviously we know of, the Lawrence Larkins, we know the Chael Sonnens, we know the Matt Mitrione's, the Gegards, the Rory's. Of course, they have these big-name fighters. Even the Michael Chandler's, who are Bellator-grown fighters. Bellator also houses lots of fighters who are smaller and who are starting, right? Some fighters come in with a record of 0-0 or 0-1. So I think even for a progression phase and to kind of a development phase, this is the right place for Kevin Ferguson Jr. because Bellator is a number two promotion MMA, right? If he wants to build a name for himself, let him take out these no-names that nobody really cares about right now under the Bellator banner, because you still will get some sort of recognition under your name. And plus, his dad fought in Bellator, so there is that kind of lineage and that kind
of... That's true. He's got that Scott Coker connection.
He has that Scott Coker connection, exactly. And whenever Kimbo Slice fought on a Bellator card, he was obviously the main event name, right? It's the name that sells for Kimbo Slice. Now, what I hope with Kevin Ferguson Jr. is that he's able to use that name coupled with the proper training and proper skills and the proper background, you know? Kimbo Slice came from some harsh environments. He had to box his way to literally in his backyard. And I don't think Baby Slice is in that same position. So I think he needs to kind of work on himself and perform better.
Yep.
So with that, you already touched on this. Let's talk about the third last fight of the event. I share the same feelings as you, but I want you to get your thoughts on it first. Lorenz Larkin versus Ion Pascu. What did you think?
For Lorenz Larkin, this is kind of why I am so harsh on guys after they sort of exit the UFC and they have that sort of chip on their shoulder, where they say things like, you know, I was on a streak, the division was muddled, and, you know, I just couldn't get my way to the top. Because what happens is you go over to Bellator from the UFC, like Gegard. Really, Rory McDonald is only the name I can think of that didn't have this problem, where you go over and you just, it seems like there's a drop-off in performance. And with Lorenz Larkin, I remember the performances you put on in the UFC. And, you know, you carry over to Bellator, you know, I'm watching the pre-fight interviews. Oh, Lorenz Larkin's there. I expect those type of performances, you know, even back when he was in Strikeforce. And it's like, nothing really stood out to me about this one. It just seemed like he was stuck in the mud a little bit. Even his combos, like, he struck me as a little gun-shy. And credit to him, he shut down a lot of the combos, too. It's not all one-sided on Lorenz. It takes two to tango, but it just feels like Lorenz, you know, he is still in his winning ways, so can't be that critical, but it does feel like there's a slight drop-off in performance.
No, yeah, I agree, and I like your point on how you said the drop in performance, or these fighters that have that kind of chip on their shoulder from the UFC and transition typically to Bellator, but now we see with Eddie Alvarez to 1FC, which we can get into on a whole different topic. However, since Lorenz Larkin has joined the Bellator ranks, he's only 2-2. He lost his first two fights, and he's won his last two fights under the Bellator organization. And, you know, not taking away from anyone he's fought or lost to, such as Douglas Lima, but I had a lot of hope for Lorenz Larkin when he was in the UFC. He showed a lot of good traits in his fights, even the ones that he lost. Yes, you know, his opponent looked better, and maybe his training wasn't too, you know, prestige or well executed, but I always had a lot of hype for Lorenz Larkin. I thought he was a good distance fighter. I thought he had good striking, good management, and always game ready. But ever since his transition to Bellator, I've seen kind of, you know, lackluster performances. And even though he won Bellator 207, like you said, it wasn't anything too, you know, spectacular. And I definitely thought Lorenz Larkin had plenty of opportunities to go in there and outstrike Ion, but didn't seem like he really wanted to take that. And like you said, being gun shy.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, I'm taking a quick look at his record. He's got wins over Santiago Ponzinibbio, John Howard, Jorge Masvidal, Neil Magny, even stopped Neil Magny. So I sort of, you know, those things, they linger, especially when people leave organizations. And he left the UFC on a two-fight win streak, the last fight in the UFC being a stoppage. And, you know, the Douglas Lima one, I sort of attributed to a little bit of transition and just not cage rust, but organization, like just a transition, like one scene to the next. But the Paul Daly one, that was the sign to me that something just was off.
Yeah.
And last night I watched this fight with Fernando Gonzalez, same thing. And now we two decisions in a row. And I just got to wonder, where does he go moving forward in that division?
Yeah, I think under Bellator, I think if Bellator is going to have a tournament for middleweights or is Lorenz Larkin a welterweight or a middleweight right now under Bellator?
He's a welterweight. He won the, that was an alternate bout for the tournament, right? I believe.
Yeah, so it was an alternate bout. So he's not really in the tournament. He's just an alternate. But I don't think he's able to hang in there with Rory, you know. Just to kind of cut to the chase, I don't think he can beat Rory. And with that, there's no point in setting up a fight with him versus Rory, you know. I think he may be able to capitalize on some matches that he gets under the welterweights within Bellator, but I guess a top talent, like you said, he lost to Paul Daly, and not taking anything away from Paul Daly, he's an excellent fighter, one of the most dangerous standing fighters with dynamite in each hand. However, I thought Lorenz Larkin should have enough tools to put Paul Daly away with his kicking and capitalizing on the style of Paul Daly. So I'm with you. You know, I don't know what's happened to Mr. Monsoon, but hopefully he can figure out his ways and kind of show a more memorable performance in his next outing under Bellator.
Yep. Yeah, hopefully he can get in that tournament somewhere, but at the same time, I'm hoping no one falls out, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the co-main event. We got Big Country, Roy Nelson, and Sergey Kartanov. What did you think?
So I'm not, and who are these guys to go around listening to us like on podcasts when it comes to retirement or not? But in my opinion, Roy Nelson, you've reached the end of the line.
Yeah.
I mean, Kartanov, if I'm not mistaken, he fought in Bellator before, right?
Right. Yeah.
He did. Okay. And for Roy Nelson, he was known as the guy with the granite chin. I mean, it used to be, remember the fight with Mark Hunt and Roy Nelson?
Yeah, of course.
All the marketing leading up was, who's got, you know, the granite chin and all, and go from that to here now, it just, I don't know.
I actually have to, sorry to interrupt you, yeah. I have to correct myself. Sergey Kartanov did actually not fight previously under Bellator, as far as I remember. I know he fought in Strikeforce and Dream. I know his last fight was M1, but I don't think prior to that he fought in Bellator. But which kind of?
He's 1-1 in Bellator, by knockout.
So he did fight before in Bellator.
Yep. He's got 1 in 2016, 1 in 2017. Yep.
Okay, gotcha. And so, yeah, like you were saying, the whole Roy Nelson story, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just have to fact check myself.
Oh, no, it just that's pretty much all I had to say about it. I mean, I look at, pull up Roy Nelson's record, and it's like, I mean, that's rough.
Yeah, you
know,
that is.
It's like he's got wins over, you know, you have to go back a while. I mean, Dave Herman, Matt Mitrione, Chuck Congo, that was the last time he was on a win streak. And
right,
that was in 2013. And since then, he's got losses to, you know, Josh Barnett, Overeem, Derek Lewis, Mitrione, and now Kartanov. So it's hard to see where does Roy Nelson go. And, you know, the tournament, you know, you're looking at the guys in that tournament and, you know, seeing a Roy Nelson fight, do you see him being able to compete with any of those guys, Chael Sonnen and, you know, Ryan Bader included? I don't think so.
No.
So it's just hard for me to say where I see Roy Nelson going.
Yeah, and like you said, his chin was what was able to sell him, right? He had this appearance with him. His cardio has always been suspect. We knew he has great ground game, and we knew the power that he possessed. But now it seems like he lost his chin. I think he's taken too many fights. He's been in too many wars. Mark Hunt, excellent example. The Junior Dos Santos fight, where he just took a beating. You know, all these fights, they kind of stack up into Roy, and he's kind of a more older fighter. He competed back on the Ultimate Fighter Heavyweight Edition with Kimbo Slice, with Brendan Schaub, and he actually won that tournament, and he looked pretty promising, especially in his performances against, you know, Stefan Struve. But since I think his glory days are done, I don't know, maybe he has to fight to pay the bills or whatever. It's kind of a win-win for Bellator, because he is a heavyweight in the roster. So no matter what, you do have an available heavyweight to fight whoever you want, kind of. Heavyweights are always kind of money makers. Whenever they put on a fight, they can you can be sure that there's going to be some fireworks. And Roy Nelson, even though to maybe casual fans, he's not so well known. I think his appearance kind of works for him, where it's kind of like, look at that fat guy fighting the octagon, if you know what I mean. And yeah, he does have a bit of a name to him as well. So I think for Bellator, they're definitely going to keep milking Roy. But I think for Roy's safety, for his health, and for his kind of professional standing, he may want to take a step back and be a little bit smarter with his approaches.
Yeah, I it's hard for me to see where Roy Nelson goes. I mean, it was one of those things when I saw that he was fighting on his card, it's like, oh, there's Roy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you start reaching that territory, it's, you know, I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah. But let's talk how good Sergey Kartanov looked in that fight. I mean, he picked apart Roy. He placed his shots properly. And what I liked about Sergey, what I like a lot about heavyweights especially, is when they see that they hurt their opponent and their opponent is kind of wobbly, they don't necessarily go in there with those big haymakers or those, you know, throw it all or nothing punches where they run the risk of exhausting themselves. We saw that also, that same kind of mentality, and in the Alexander Volkov Derek Lewis fight. Alexander Volkov knew Derek Lewis was injured, he knew he had him on the run, and he picked the shots carefully. Although that may have not worked for Alexander Volkov because Derek Lewis came back and knocked him out, we saw how that can work for Sergey. He knew he had Roy hurt earlier, and he took the time, the next 30 seconds, or even to a minute, to place his shots correctly, find the openings, and make Roy panic a little bit against the fence.
Yeah, Kartanov, that's sort of where I was going to lean with my like analysis of him too. It pretty much felt like, you know, I'm always worried when with heavyweights, once they have their guy hurt, that's always what I'm looking for. Like that sort of Chicago Pat Perry moment where it's like he's hurt, but, you know, you rush in too much, you're going to end up asleep. So, but it just felt like he picked him apart. Now for Kartanov, I know the sort of story, or at least from my understanding, the story around him was he's sort of the journeyman in the sense that he was a fighter without an organization. He had a fight here, and, you know, it seemed like he's under contract, and he moves around. And now he's back in Bellator, so I hope, you know, he's got a new year coming up. I hope he can put together a nice string of fights, because that was entertaining.
Yeah, it was entertaining. And one thing with Sergey, you know, we have to look at his age, because like you said, he's been around everywhere, like in M1, Pride, previously in Strikeforce, previously in Bellator. The age, do you think he can be a potential contender in Bellator?
In a Bellator heavyweight division, yeah. The Bellator heavyweight, yeah. I mean, because you have to look at who else they have, right? So, you know, you take guys like Roy Nelson, Chuck Congo, Tim Johnson, even Fedor, and they're up in age as well. I mean, that's sort of the story of the heavyweight division. So, you know, if you're pushing 40, you're in your prime if you're a heavyweight.
Yeah, I agree. That's actually an interesting fight that you bring up. I actually like the idea of having Sergey versus Chuck Congo now. I think that could be an interesting fight for both of these guys, both coming off first round KOs, both are aged veterans, both are on a somewhat winning streak, especially Chuck Congo, 7 fights in a row now. I think that would be a great fight to watch. Would you tune in to watch that fight?
Tuning in to watch a Chuck Congo fight, I don't know about that, but I mean, I would watch it. I'm sure we'll get in the Chuck Congo, but
we definitely will. Let's wrap the Bellator 207 with, I'm gonna let you lead this topic because I watched your video, main event, Ryan Darth Bader versus Matt Meathead Mitrione. Winner goes to the finals and fights the winner of Bellator 208. What did you think of that fight, Tyree?
Okay, so Ryan Bader versus Matt Mitrione. This fight is everything that I find wrong with the sport I love, wrestling. It is everything I find wrong with it. So Ryan Bader, leading up to, you know, I watch all the promos and he's talking, you know, I'm dominant and oh, I'm a light heavyweight and, you know, just speaking up all these things. And then we get in the fight after, you know, you made me stay up all night for this card on a Friday, and you get in the cage and you lay on top of him for 15 minutes. And then after the fight is over, you're huffing down water like you actually did something. Look at that. I mean, from a pure tech, from a pure technique standpoint, you can't complain with what Ryan Bader did. He got the job done.
Yeah.
Almost no damage. From a
Right.
pure technique standpoint, if you're a coach, that's exactly what you want to see. But as a consumer on the other side of the, you know, of the TV screen, I mean, this was watching paint dry would have been more entertaining.
It was
than
painful.
that.
And I want to make a note here. The type of wrestling and mauling or ground and pound that Ryan Bader implements is entirely different than the ground and pound that we've seen from Khabib Nurmagomedov. Khabib's ground and pound and his mauling and his takedown game is extremely fun to watch. You can watch that all day. You can go back to watching his videos and you could be entertained for much longer than seeing the performance of Ryan Bader on Bellator 207. However, Tyreef, I want to bring up his last performance to get him into the heavyweight tournament at that stage was a 15-second knockout of King Mo. So what do you think? Why do you think he didn't choose to stand up with Matt Mitrione?
Well, with Mitrione in the first round, I think it's a situation of if I'm wrestling someone and I get a takedown and I can control them, especially for an extended period of time, I mean, the recipe is out on you. I'm just going to go back and do it second and third round. So I think that does explain the latter part of the fight. I mean, King Mo, just looking at the optics going in, I don't blame Bader for doing that. And then you look at the fight before that, Lenton Vassell, he fought him like that too. But, you know, you go the fight before that, Phil Davis, he doesn't fight him like that. Lil Nog, even though he got the TKO, he did not fight him like that. I think it's a situation where he sort of just looks going in, what am I going to be facing? You know, a guy like Mitrione, he stands and trades with Mitrione. He's on another knockout, you know, reel. And he doesn't want that. So why not go in and shoot the double A on the guy that has said in interviews leading up to it that, you know, wrestling is his deficiency?
Yeah. I think what that tells us, more so than anything, is the versatility of Ryan Bader in the light heavyweight division and now heavyweight division. I've always been a fan of Ryan Bader. I think he's one of the hardest hitting bigger light heavyweights. His wrestling was obviously seen when he was able to beat Vinny Magalhães at the Ultimate Fighter finale. When we know how good of a jiu-jitsu ace Vinny is, even when it was up against the cage, Vinny couldn't do anything to Ryan Bader. So watching him beat King Mo with the knockout, watching him beat Matt Mitrione by this, you know, very entertaining unanimous decision, and knowing that Matt Mitrione, out of his 13 wins, 11 have been by knockout, 3 of his last 4 wins have been by knockout within the first or second round, and he went to a majority decision with Roy Nelson, I think Matt Mitrione knew, or he should have known, you know. I think when we talk about Ryan Bader and we pray on Ryan Bader for that performance, what we lack and fail to talk about is the lack of preparation of Matt Mitrione. Matt Mitrione should have known Ryan Bader wasn't going to trade with him. And Matt Mitrione should have prepared better with his takedown defense and especially his clinch game, because that's where he lost all the battles. And that's where he lost all of his control, especially that wrist control that cost him all 3 rounds pretty much. And to get, you know, to have someone control your wrist while taking a beating with the other hand, I mean, that definitely was a confidence breaker from Mr. Matt Mitrione.
Yeah, for Matt Mitrione, I mean, he that's why it's so hard for me to even say anything, because he spent 15 minutes on his back. So from Mitrione's perspective, I learned nothing new. I didn't even learn anything bad.
Yeah.
He's the same Matt Mitrione. And, you know, with Bader, the only reason why I get so frustrated with performances like that is because you see guys like Chael, who is clearly outmatched, and he goes for broke with everything.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, with Ryan Bader, it just felt like he said in the post-fight scrum, he says, did you hear the boos? He says, oh, it was a maul. If it was so much of a mauling, why didn't you turn the pressure up?
Right.
You had him on his back for 15 minutes. I'm not saying turn into Khabib and start winging, you know, start winging elbows and everything and get in bad position, but if my opponent's wrestling deficiency is that high to where I know the skill gap is like this, then I would love to see the ground strikes from that fight.
Yeah, I would too. But from that, we obviously know that now Ryan Bader is moving on to the heavyweight Grand Prix final, which leads us to talk about the event that happened last night, Bellator 208. Knowing all the fights in that, I just want to take your time to talk about the top five fights if you got a chance to see them, which I'm sure you did, because I look on your Periscope account. I'm going to link that in the description below. Well, let's talk about the first fight is Henry Corrales versus Andy Main. Henry Corrales was able to get a TKO in the third victory. What did you think of his performance?
That fight was pretty plain and straightforward for me. It didn't really do too much for me because Andy Main is, he's is a tough guy, right? From the Ultimate Fighter. From that, a lot of the tough guys from, like, I'd say the past 10 seasons and women, they're sort of like nameless faces to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was watching the pre-fight presser, and once he said, you know, oh, I'm from the Ultimate Fighter, then that sort of made me like, okay, let me keep that in mind as I watch this fight. And I'm going to be honest, I truly didn't see anything that it sort of reminded me of the Lorenz Larkin fight from 207. Yeah. Nothing really stood out to me. But I will say for Henry Corrales, I think that does huge favors for him getting a win like that. Like, because for a guy in Bellator where he's at, that's a name, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I agree. And if you look, Henry Corrales, when he first entered Bellator, his record was 13-0. And then he took three consecutive losses under the Bellator name. And that must have put a confidence boost, that must have hurt your confidence coming into an organization like Bellator, riding a 13 fight win streak, undefeated, and then your first three fights, you lose all of them. I mean, he's bounced back now with four fights. He came into Bellator at 12-0, and now his record 16-3. He won his last four fights under the Bellator cage. In this featherweight division, right? We don't really hear much about the Bellator featherweight division. But I think Henry's performance against Andy, what it showed most importantly is a difference in level of the two combatants. You know, I think Henry just outclassed him in every single department, especially the striking department. And Andy really had no answer to that. And I think it just showed the gap in both of these individuals.
Yeah, exactly. This fight, I will say it was a good fight to open up the main card. I felt like was because it wasn't too fast to where it set the bar too high, but it wasn't a stinker by any means. I felt like they put it perfectly on this card.
Yeah.
But like I said, going for Andy Main, now what do you think that does for him? Because that can't be any favors.
No, I think Andy Main, it can't, but again, we're not talking about UFC. A loss here under Bellator isn't as significant as a loss in UFC, because like we've previously talked about, Lorenz Larkin was in a two fight with losing streak, and Bellator still maintained him as that fighter they got from the UFC. Even on this card, Benson Henderson, he had losses under the Bellator banner, and still he was a co-main event for this card, and he wasn't even a title holder under the Bellator division. So I think when we talk about Bellator, we can be more lenient to a person's losses, but it's more important on how they bounce back, right? Like, again, this parallels to Kevin Ferguson Jr. A second loss under Bellator, how will he come back, and can he string up some wins and build his name moving forward? Yep. Now, Tyreef, the next fight on the card, I know you were a huge fan of Ryan Bader versus Matt Mitrione, so I know you love this fight. Anatoly Tolkov versus Alexander Shlemko, Russia versus Russia, the younger Russian versus the legendary Russian. Tell me, when did you fall asleep during this fight?
This fight, I mean, I watched because of Shlemko. Like, yeah. I didn't have any prior knowledge to Tolkov at all, so I was only watching for Shlemko. And Shlemko, he's a wild man. To me, he's either going to be completely stale or completely hot. So I didn't know which one to get. And around 2.5 minutes in, I figured I was gonna get the cold version. So
yeah.
I went and rolled up.
Yeah. I can't blame you. I mean, this fight was even more boring and lackluster than main event of Bellator 207. I mean, I like how Alexander Shlemko tried to do some, you know, tried to add some engagement, but when you do spinning back fists or spinning back kicks or high kicks just in the air and not really in the striking distance of Anatoly, you kind of just showing, okay, well, what are you going to do? You're not hitting with this guy. You're just kind of dancing. And then Anatoly didn't want anything of it. Dragged him to the ground. Held him mostly from back clinch, actually. Didn't even show any good takedowns. Didn't show any good ground and pound. Didn't really show any... It really looked like Anatoly threw any fists in that entire fight. It looked like Shlemko was just... You know, he was frustrated at the event. Did he not prepare for this kind of fight? I don't know. I don't think this is a fight that Shlemko likes and the fights that he enjoys. But at the end of the day, Anatoly Tarkov did get the job done.
Yep, and that's pretty much, like, after a fight like that, it's like, that's pretty much, like, for a guy like Shlemenko, you gotta wonder, like, that... You know, I think he's pretty much safe, though, because, again, we are talking about Bellator, but yeah. It just makes you wonder, like, where does the road turn, so to speak?
Yeah, and only time will tell with Alexander Shlemko, but I'm sure we will see him in another event soon enough. Now, I want to know your opinion on this. We talked about ref stoppages in Bellator 207, bringing up Mike Kimball in a 6-second knockout of Alex Potts. Let's talk about Czech Congo versus now Bellator athlete Timothy Johnson. Timothy, former UFC heavyweight. What did you think?
Now, this one, going into it, Timothy Johnson, I do remember he fought Daniel Omalechunk in the UFC. I do remember that fight. And even though it was a split decision win, with heavyweights in the UFC, there's not that many names and there's not that many faces. And Timothy Johnson is a memorable name. So after he left the UFC on a win, you know, I was excited to see his name on this card. And that, had Czech Congo not been fighting Timothy Johnson, I think I would have tuned out, because you look at Czech Congo, he is a decision machine.
Right.
Now, going into the actual fight, okay, that was one of the weirdest stoppages. It felt like Timothy Johnson was taking a step forward in the pocket, and it didn't even look like Congo hit him with anything really necessarily hard. And even the way he fell down, it was just, he fell on a weird angle, and Congo's delivering these weird shots to the side of the head, and then finally one sneaks through and crumples him. But that was a weird performance. And for Czech Congo, I'm not ready to, even though he's now got two KOs back to back, I'm not ready to turn the page on him. I still think Czech Congo is the guy we think he is. Now for Timothy Johnson, I think, again, we talked earlier in the show about, you know, that sort of switching organizations. And I think he's just another victim of that. I don't think he looked egregious. I think he'll get back on the horse and he'll look better next time.
See, I think I have to disagree with you on Czech Congo, because what we need to realize here is that Czech Congo is on a 7-fight win streak in the heavyweight division of Bellator, and that makes it the longest win streak in Bellator's heavyweight division. That has to say something. I actually want to add a little side note. Last night, I tweeted, can we appreciate the fact that Czech Congo is now riding a 7-fight win streak? And actually, Czech Congo himself retweeted that tweet. I found that a little bit comedic.
Nice.
Czech Congo, if you're watching this, thank you for that. You know I got your back on those things. But yeah, I mean, Timothy Johnson, I only first knew of Timothy Johnson when I saw him in an EA Sports UFC 3 game. I said, who is this guy with this giant mustache? He looks mad cool. So I looked him up. I was excited to see that he's now fighting under Bellator. You know, we see him leaving the UFC on a win streak. Did he get a better offer from Bellator? Did the UFC not see value in him? Of course, losing in the first 68 seconds against Czech Congo isn't the greatest way to start your Bellator career. But again, it is Bellator. This is a new face. This is a new heavyweight. And I think, like you said, he's going to be promising. If Bellator is able to give him a few fights that he's able to kind of, get comfortable with. Not those high profile fights. Not a co main event fight against a person for like a heavyweight Grand Prix alternate potential fight. Just another heavyweight for him to get comfortable, find his groove under the Bellator banner, and hopefully get a few wins under his belt before taking the step forward in his career with Bellator.
Yep. And for Czech Congo, it almost makes you wonder because when you said, seven fights in a row now?
Yep, yep.
It makes you wonder, why wasn't he in the Grand Prix?
Exactly. And that's a great point because I think if we had, for example, Frank Mir, his first fight was against Fedor, and that was a heavy Grand Prix tournament fight that established the semifinals. I would put a case that I think Czech Congo could have also beaten Frank Mir. I feel like if Czech Congo was there with Fedor Emelianenko, I think it would have been a more exciting fight. I think, honestly, Czech is more diverse, a better fighter than Frank Mir. However, the side of it is the business side. Frank Mir just came to Bellator. He just signed with Bellator organization. He just left UFC, former heavyweight champion in the UFC. So did it do it for the name? Could possibly be the reason.
Yeah, I'd like to see Czech Congo get some names that are going to force sort of his position because he's in that weird space where he's getting the wins, but I don't know if it's necessarily in the public conscious if it's raising his stock. Right. And, seven fights, but you look at who he's fought and, they're not all names. So I think going forward, it warrants him getting a name.
Yeah. And I completely agree. And I think that would be what Czech Congo is looking for as well. But let's now focus our attention on the co-main event fight. I want to put a disclaimer first and foremost to you, Tyreef, and to everyone watching. I stopped being a Benson Henderson fan quite a while ago when he lost to Anthony Pettis via that armbar. I always liked the flashy style of Benson Henderson, but I feel as if he has lost himself. His talents are wasted doing tricks more so than performing well. And this fight against Saad the Assassin Awad, I picked Saad to win based on a few lackluster performances under the Bellator previously. However, I still wasn't happy with Benson Henderson. The cage grab was very questionable. What did you think of that?
Yeah, Benson, he it's been a while since he's impressed me. I think you would have to go all the way back to his performance with, who was that, Gilbert Melendez?
Right.
For me to think of a Benson fight that really got me truly excited, even though one of my favorite fights is Ben Henderson versus Clay Guida.
Yeah, that's so a great fight.
But outside of that, Benson, he was sort of the main person I had in mind when I was saying, when these guys leave the UFC, it feels like there's sort of a change in mentality, a sort of drop off. Benson was the main guy I was thinking of. And this fight pretty much just drove the point home. And it feels weird to say that because he got his nickname Smooth from just sort of, he put things together in a way that was crazy. Like, you go back and watch his fight with Anthony Pettis in WEC.
Right.
And then you look at this fight. Yep. I mean, he just put things together differently. And in this fight, even when he's on the ground, that used to be the position when Ben Henderson was on top, you knew magic was about to happen.
I agree.
And it just didn't look like the old Benson. And I don't know, moving forward, he talked about the welterweight tournament. I don't know if I would put him in that, maybe as an alternate. Right. But it's nice to see him get a win. I'm happy every time Benson Henderson gets a win. I like to see some of these older guys stick around some more. So it was a good win, but it was a weird one.
It was a weird one, I agree. And I kind of feel more so for Saad Awad. He was riding a 4-fight win streak with Bellator. He was making a name for himself. He was also a fighter on the UFC. And this kind of Benson Henderson performance definitely derails that. I think, again, because Bellator, they can take that loss, I think this one's going to sting Saad Awad a little bit more than just an average loss, let's say, for Timothy Johnson, whoever it might be. The one good part with Saad Awad's performance was in that third round when he caught Benson Henderson. They both kind of fell down. And another thing that I found kind of comedic and kind of hilarious was when Bellator tweeted, who did you have winning in this back and forth battle between Benson Henderson and Saad Awad? To which I thought, it wasn't a back and forth battle. There is no question who won the fight. It's Benson Henderson, and he won, you know, by unanimous decision. Two refs thought they were all 10-9s, where one ref actually called one round a 10-8, which is, you know, that definitely must hurt Saad Awad for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and Bellator, you know, you see today Scott Coker coming out and having to defend his card, and this isn't the first time, saying, you know, there are no fixed fights here, and yep. I feel like, and I do feel like it is unfair, but it's because of fights like that where just, it just feels like weird stuff happens. So when I go on Twitter and I see them say stuff like that, it just makes it feel like they're trying to cover, and it's all unfair. And you know, when, again, Scott Coker has to come out and defend his own card, I mean, I just feel like that says a lot.
Right, it does. And that kind of leads us to the main event, where there is kind of a questionable reasoning as to how the fight ended. And of course, we're talking about Fedor Emelianenko versus Chael Sonnen. That was the main event of Bellator 208. Way more exciting than the main event for Bellator 207. We had literally the legend of Russia versus the American gangster Chael Sonnen. I picked Chael Sonnen to win this fight based on the performance I saw from Ryan Bader, but I did not give enough credit to Fedor Emelianenko. He is a monster, and the most impressive part for me, Tyreef, was his takedown defense and his sambo skills, and how he was able to pull off successful sweeps and pull off successful takedowns of his own.
Yeah, the big thing that stood out for me, I'll start with Fedor. The big thing that stood out to me in this fight, and to make it official, it was 4:46 of round one that he got the stoppage. Mm-hmm. And the thing that impressed me with Fedor is everyone leading, I don't know if you saw his open workout, but he looked a little lethargic going through it. He just sort of looked like he was going through the motions. And with Chael, he forces the action. So when you have a guy that's a little bit more lackluster, it's up to the other guy to push that pace, which Chael did. And to see Fedor, after everything he's been through, still keep up the pace, keep up the scramble, have the technique. You know, Chael had his back. He turtle positioned right up, got right into guard. You know, was working on passes and knew when to throw Chael, knew what he... Fedor still got it, man.
He does. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, those were my takeaways from Fedor. I just thought going in, he may have been a little sharp, Warren. He may have been a little bit slow, but no, he kept up with a guy that really should be at 185.
Yeah. So what did you think of Chael Sonnen and his performance?
For Chael, it's so hard. Someone tweeted me before the fight. They said, the question still remains, how good is Chael Sonnen? Yeah. And I went back and thought on it, and that is a real true statement, because I feel like he's in the Conor McGregor space in the sense that the story can't get told on him in the right way. People either think he's complete garbage or they think he's the best of all time. And obviously, the truth is somewhere in the middle. So with Chael, I didn't know what I was going to get. I thought he was either going to get stuffed and you know, pounded out in the first minute, or it was going to be a classic Chael decision. But in that first scramble where he got caught and he was sort of on his back and Fedor's raining down punches, I just assumed that was it. It was about a minute and a half into the fight. I thought that was it. And to see Chael, after all the things that have been said about him, about how he likes to give up, he gave up against Anderson Silva, he threw the second fight. Yep. You know, he never won the big one. For me, as a fan, to see Chael fight through that against a heavyweight when all the cards are on the table, I mean, that said a lot. This guy, he's not going in there diving. Chael wanted to win. He went for the win and even got back up and got a takedown after that. So for Chael, classic, and I don't think it hurts his stock any. Within a half hour of the event being over, he's on ESPN. So.
Yep, yeah, exactly. And I like how you brought that up with Chael on how good is Chael. And honestly, Chael's 42 years old, guys. He's 42 years old. Let the man fight other older people. Thank God he's not fighting Ryan Bader and taking a beating. He's clearly making names for himself under the podcast realm, under the ESPN analyst realm. He is a great and phenomenal analytic. He has the experience to back it up. Let him just have these fights. And Tyreef covered it. We need to give him credit where it's deserved. He hung in there with Fedor. He could have just turtled up. He could have just kept taking the beatings and lost a minute and 30 seconds
in. And no one would have said anything about it.
Exactly. But what he did was he fought back. He got dominant positions. He took Fedor down twice. One of them, Tyreef, if you remember, was that big slam in that first round, right? When he picked Fedor up and took him to the ground. I, of course, need to kind of judge Chael on one of his moves, and that was when he had Fedor in a turtle position and you wanted to flip him. Big mistake. We don't really this wasn't a wrestling match. There was no pinning and winning. There was no need to do that in any sort of way. Even if Chael successfully pulled that off, there was no reason to really do that. It costed too much energy. You were already in a dominant position. You could have dogged him. Chael, I mean, did you do it? Why would you do that? I don't understand. Fedor was smart enough to just let Chael flip himself, and then he had a dominant position, side control.
Yeah, and what's crazy about that is it's like, you know, that is the story of Chael. You look at the fight and you're like, look, he's in dominant position. Finally, yeah. He's got it. He's got the back. And it looked like he was going for hooks, and you're like, Chael, what you doing, Chael? He's going for a flip, and then he just slips right off, and you're just like, Chael, that is the story of Chael.
It goes
for a spinning back fist on Anderson Silva, slips and catches his knee right in the sternum. It's like
getting caught in the triangle choke when you're about to dethrone the greatest middleweight of all time in Anderson Silva. Yeah, like you said, that is the story of Chael Sonnen. I think Fedor, though, looked really good. I thought Fedor looked really good in his performance at that age, too. And like you said, this guy still got it. And you know what? I think you could make the case he is in the top five heavyweights at Bellator. Of course, he has lost to Matt Mitrione, and Matt Mitrione lost to Ryan Bader. Does that necessarily make Matt Mitrione the number two heavyweight in the division? We know MMA math doesn't always work. However, I think I'll say it right now. I think Ryan Bader will beat Fedor, okay? I think there's too many tools for Ryan Bader to overwhelm Fedor, and to, if he has to take it to the ground, he can let it stand up. Of course, it's not going to be as easy as it was with Matt Mitrione, but I think Ryan Bader can still do it. However, if Fedor catches Ryan, I'm not going to be too surprised. I think he can catch Ryan Bader. I think Ryan Bader has shown potential that he has a suspect chin in the past. Has it really been tested? Maybe a few times, but he does use his dominant wrestling to avoid the heavy strikes. And we saw wrestling doesn't necessarily work as well as it does on Fedor because he has his Sambo background. What do you think?
I mean, this is Ryan Bader. We're talking about the same guy that got put down in Brazil by Glover Teixeira. So it's like, yeah. I don't think he's gone that far from that day. He's definitely a little bit better. But one thing on Fedor, I think Chael actually did him a lot of favors in that he had to make him fight for that win.
He did.
Especially with how Fedor looked going into it, you know, with people picking apart how he looked in his workout and stuff. I think if he goes out there and sleeps Chael in 30 seconds, people say, oh, okay, he's still, you know, Fedor at the end of the line. But no, he had to hustle. He had to bring out the Sambo. He still had to bring out the ground and pound two times in the same round, since, you know, people in MMA love to say, oh, he blew his arms out. Well, he didn't. He did it for two consecutive goes.
Yeah.
So I think he actually showed a lot going into this Bader fight. And so I think we're looking at a finals that is going to be either – it's going to be one-sided one way or the other.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, with Fedor, even in his last win against Frank Mir, he got caught by Frank Mir. And then, like – you gotta think about who really gets caught by Frank Mir.
Yeah.
Minotaur Noguera got caught by Frank Mir, but again, Frank Mir at that point was a different beast. That was a very well trained, very game focused Frank Mir. A Frank Mir that doesn't have to balance an analytics Bellator a voice on Bellator's team versus a full time trainer. Mixed martial artist.
Not to mention all the things he's doing abroad with ACB.
Yep. Exactly. So Frank Mir isn't a full-time MMA athlete. He may fight under the Bellator name time and time again, but he's doing a lot of other things. What else is Fedor doing? What have you heard Fedor really get into besides just purely training mixed martial arts or running his mixed martial arts gym? I mean, he's always around that environment. He's always in shape. He's just getting older, but Fedor is still Fedor, and we saw it. We now have the heavy Grand Prix, Fedor, the last Emperor Emelianenko versus Ryan Darth Bader. Tyreef, if you had to make a decision right now, who do you think walks away with the belt or heavyweight title?
Well, just to keep it short, I think Ryan Bader, he showed that he is still the same guy to me. He's still prone to the same sort of mistakes. I feel like he's prone to getting complacent. So, whereas on the flip side, Fedor has shown that he can still turn back the clock. He can scramble with you. He can go technique for technique with you, and he still has the size and speed to go with it. So that being said, I'm going to lean towards Fedor, and I'm gonna go with a TKO, not sure which round.
Right. And my pick, like I said, will be Ryan Bader. I am siding with the wrestler once again, the younger wrestler, and we could see Ryan Bader becoming a two-weight simultaneous champion for Bellator, and this will be the first one in Bellator's history. What do you think of that? What do you think of Ryan Bader being the light heavyweight champion as well as the heavyweight champion?
That sort of, to me, in a weird way, it sort of feels like we're tying up a story that started years ago, which was who is the Bellator heavyweight champion? There was a good while, and it was actually during the time when Chet Congo was getting his 7-fight win streak, where there simply wasn't a belt up for grabs
Exactly.
for anyone.
Right.
And this tournament, which a lot of people complained was going, on all year and all that. And now we're finally here. The finals are set. We know come January we are going to have a Bellator heavyweight champion. And I just feel like, to me, that's the thing that stands out the most. We are finally getting an end to this, what feels like 3-year-long story. We will finally have a Bellator heavyweight champion come January.
Yeah. And you know what? I think Ryan Bader is the best athlete they have on their roster. His fights may not be the most interesting. I think the best fighters under Bellator, the top two are Gegard and Ryan Bader. I think Ryan, if he were to come to UFC, he could hang. I think he'd be counting DC, counting Gus, counting John Jones. He's number four light heavyweight in the world because he's beaten Ilir Latifi, and Ilir Latifi is currently the number four ranked UFC fighter under
Right.
the UFC's heavyweight division, and Ryan
Swept
Bader
them.
beat him. He swept him, exactly. So I think Ryan Bader comes back to UFC, could hang in there. We know that DC is retiring, so that opens up a slot. Who knows what's gonna happen with John Jones? He is one of the most unreliable fighter. So taking that, all those in considerations, blacking out the people who can't really be considered, you got Ryan Bader as the number one, two athlete in the light heavyweight division, in my opinion. And now that he's gonna beat, or if he does beat Fedor and becomes a dual champion under Bellator, I mean, it's gonna be great. It's gonna be a great career for Ryan Bader. He won the Ultimate Fighter. He left the UFC on a winning term, and now he went to a different organization and completely dominated there as well.
Yep, and for Bader, you feel bad for him. Well, you felt bad for him in a way because you know that he put in the hours and the time in the
Yeah.
UFC. He put in all, say what you say about his style, the man got the wins that he needed to get a title shot. He did put it together. I mean, to the point where DC showed up, and they were going back and forth. That was almost a
Yep.
fight that happened for the belt. And then he takes one sloppy single leg on Rumble. It's clapped
Yeah.
on the back of the head, and rest is history. So to see him now in the finals of the heavyweight Grand Prix, almost champ of Bellator. I mean, it's like night and day for Bader. So I know he's got to be excited going into this finals.
Yeah, and I think Ryan Bader's UFC, his losses have overshadowed his wins. His loss against Tito Ortiz was definitely devastating. His loss to John Jones was just sickening. I think it just showed how good John Jones is. And that loss to Anthony Rumble Johnson was just a desperation into getting this guy to the ground. And a person who, Ryan Bader, he seemed like he was genuinely scared of the knockout power of Anthony Johnson, and for the right reason. But that's not the mentality to go in there to beat Anthony Johnson.
Yeah.
Now, Tyreef, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for your time for breaking down Belter 207 and Belter 208. We're going to make sure we play it back. I'll leave a link to Cash Tyreef's channel down below. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. Make sure you catch his Periscopes. Go give him a like and subscribe. And thank you guys for watching. Make sure you like and subscribe to this channel too. Let us know what you think in the comment section below. And until next time, have a good one.